Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. We're glad to have you listening. We're also very pleased to have back here on the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on the second Tuesday, second Tuesday of the month, assuming we're on our regular schedule, on the second Tuesday, she is here, and we invite your questions about things that grow in the home landscape. And we can talk about just about anything, trees and shrubs, grass, flowers, ornamental plants, stuff you can eat. Also, we can talk about houseplants, any and all of that. We draw the line at the field crops. If you got big corn and soybeans in your yard, that's you need to talk to somebody else.
But, unless they're ornamental.
Unless they're ornamental.
Maybe not.
I like to put a little soybeans in my front yard just to give it a nice greeny look. And whatever questions you might have, maybe you're still thinking about some problem from last year and you weren't really quite sure what to do about it. Maybe you're thinking about what you would like to plant in the growing season that will start not all that long. You can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you very much. And to you, too. Here we've had this weird year. We've had the warmest January on record. I don't know about you. I got snowdrops in my yard.
That are up and blooming.
Actually, also, I've seen some things, some daffodils. Some of those other early flowering bulbs are already shooting up, you know, maybe as much of as a, I don't know, inch and a half or two out of the ground. So there are some things that are definitely going, and I don't know if that's really so early or if it's actually not all that much off the pace. But certainly, as I said, January was really warm.
Yeah. Well, I think most people find things are a few weeks, if not more, early. Because I talked to a few folks that said they had their snowdrops, which is a little early. You know, normally it would bloom early anyway. You know, normally it can be February. You know, but most of the time, at least in my yard, it's usually sort of the latter part of February, 1st of March, before mine blooms. But I had some folks here in town that actually said that theirs were blooming, you know, in January, the beginning of January. And so that's really, you know, we're probably talking about a month early on some of these things. And it depends on where it is, you know, south side of the house. If things are not heavily mulched, you know, where the ground is really going to warm up quite a bit through the sun that we've been having, those things are going to start popping up early too. So
I guess then that leads to a question. If you see other some particular things that you might see that would be going a little earlier than they should, then, and well, for example, this weekend, I think we are going to get some cold temperatures, maybe lows over the weekend, single digits. Mm. So it's going to be cold. Are there some things that you would suggest people to think about, maybe providing a little bit of extra protection, maybe put a little extra mulch on them or something like that?
Yeah, I think especially when we get into these severe temperatures that you're talking about, I think if there's certain things like we were talking about the bulbs, some of those, some shredded leaves, something that sort of covers them up, that'll also hopefully help that when we do get these sunny days that maybe the soil won't, we'd like the soil to stay cold. You know, we don't want it to really warm up right now because then that encourages more growth from the plant. So we'd like things to stay cool so that they don't pop up too early. You know, some of the things like the winter aconite snowdrops, those are, you know, they're pretty tough little things and they tolerate these cold temperatures actually quite well. So it's not a big deal with those. And for most of our things like daffodils, tulips, the flower itself is still pretty deep within the bulb, so it's still fairly protected. As we get farther along and you actually start to see the flower buds or start to see color, then we get into cold temperatures, then we're talking about some problems where we might not have flowering for very long or, you know, reduced flowering, that kind of thing. So I think right now might see a little damage on the leaves, but other than that, that's probably not going to be a horrible thing.
Okay. We have some callers already. We'll start with someone on a cell phone on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hi, you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a couple of quick questions, and since I'm on a cell, I'll go ahead and hang up. I get a lawn service, but last year, I'm getting something called wet grass that's in my yard.
I'm sorry, we didn't quite catch that. Say again, what kind of grass?
I'm sorry. Well, they're calling it wet grass. I don't know. It looks like a weed to me, but it's just kind of taking over the lawn. And I do have a lawn service, but it doesn't seem to make any difference. So I was wondering what I could do about that. And then what would be the proper time? I have lilac bushes. What would be the proper time of year to prune those? And how high or how low should I go up? Go ahead and do that. And I'll go ahead and hang up.
Well, can I ask you a quick question before you hang up? Oh, maybe he's gone already.
Oh, well.
Okay. The problem is, you know, he said wet grass, I think. Maybe he's talking about water grass.
Like.
Might be
okay.
calling it water grass, okay. which is something. The problem is with water grass is people call different things water grass. And so I think probably the big thing is to find out identification of what this weed is that he's talking about. It's probably one of the perennial weeds. I don't know. Some people call tall fescue water grass, and that's that big, thick leafed thing that kind of bunches up, and it looks very different within a Kentucky bluegrass lawn. Some people call annual bluegrass water grass because it tends to come into areas that stay moist for any period of time, and it'll come in, but it's a very fine leafed kind of thing. So but it's an annual, so I think probably the number one is get some accurate identification of what the plant is. You can bring it into your local extension office. Let's figure out what it is, and then whether it's an annual, perennial, then you can start making some determinations on how to control it. So that would be number one. Probably the other thing to think about is that probably this particular weed is coming in for some reason, either, as I said, maybe it's high fertility, low fertility. I wouldn't think it'd be low fertility if you have a lawn service, but it could certainly be some other things going on, whether it's thatch or whatever. So find out why the bluegrass or your desirable grass isn't growing very well, and sort of get that taken care of so that there isn't open spaces for this other grass to come in. So kind of take care of it two different ways. As far as the lilacs, you know, they're spring blooming plants, and any of the spring blooming things, normally we would prune those right after they bloom. So, you know, May, you know, 1st of June or so is probably a good time to start thinking about pruning lilacs. And on those, we usually like to rejuvenate them and actually just take out the old stuff and then let that new stuff come up. Now, some people like the sort of tree form, which is fine. You can go with that. But really trying to encourage that new growth, because that's where you're going to get most of your flowers. So you may actually be cutting parts of it down and clear the ground.
And that the recommendation sort of is that every year you do that. You don't want to do it savagely. So maybe you do what about a third and a third
right,
and a
right.
third, something like that.
Right, right. Something like that. So you're constantly getting this new growth, so you're getting newer flowers. And then the flowers are more at ground, more at eye level, hour level, you know, where you can smell them and enjoy them rather than having them so tall that you don't really can't pick them and can't really enjoy them as well.
All right. Well, I hope that helps. Let's go to another caller, Wellington, and line number one. Hello.
I have a ficus, and actually I've been kind of pretty happy with it, that it doesn't change much, don't get much leaf droppage with the change of the seasons, but we don't have air conditioning, and so that might have some bearing on it. I've had about 4 years. It was a grocery store plant, so it's mm-hmm. grown considerably. I don't mind if it grows some more, but I don't necessarily want it to get up to my ceiling. But I've just set the container that it came in, which it's still in, inside of something that looks, you know, more decorative.
Mm-hmm.
But it's time that I think that maybe I should move it into something a little larger. I don't know whether, is this a plant that likes being somewhat root bound? I know sometimes that, you know, you can control the growth by how big a, you know, container you have things in.
Mm-hmm.
I was just kind of curious about that.
Well, I think probably a couple things is with the weeping fig or the ficuses. You know, they do have, I mean, it's great that you're not getting leaf droppage, because, you know, that's one of those plants that if they get too dry, they lose their leaves. If they don't get enough light, they lose their leaves. It's pretty much any kind of stress, they lose their leaves. So it's great. You're definitely doing the right things, because it evidently is quite happy. The problem is, of course, that as the plant gets bigger and the pot is still small, you may find that you have to water it more often, or it dries out too much in between waterings, those kind of things. So sometimes watering gets to be a real challenge. So I think probably at this point I'd be thinking about taking it out of the pot. And if you want to root prune it and then put it back in the same size pot, you could certainly do that. If you're trying to keep it small, you certainly could do that. Or if you want to go ahead and do a little bit of root pruning, but then go ahead and put it in a little bit bigger pot, but then obviously you're encouraging some new growth on it. But I think I definitely, at this point, at least take it out, trim some roots off, replenish the soil, and then maybe just go ahead and put it right back in the same size pot if you're trying to keep it smaller.
I have a question about the root pruning, because mm-hmm. I've never really ever done that. You just kind of lift it out of there and prune whatever's sticking out of the dirt, or you knock the dirt off, or how severely do you do that? Or?
Yeah, usually pretty. If you take off about a third of it, you know, is usually a pretty good way to sort of help keep it smaller, but yet not do so much damage on it that you're going to have a whole lot of branch die back on it. So you just want to look at it, pull the roots apart. Usually it pulls apart enough that you can kind of tell what's going on, and you just want to cut some of them back, like a third of them back, so that they're more in line with the size of the pot. If that makes sense.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good
right,
luck.
Thanks for the call. Next is someone in Sheldon, and this is line number two. Hello.
Hello. I'm calling because I've been having problems in my vegetable garden the last couple of years, and I think it's bacterial wilt. And I've been looking into the predatory nematodes, and I'm wondering if you could tell me how frequent the application and if that might be effective for the cucumber beetle.
Yeah, boy, I haven't, you know, I've certainly heard a lot about predatory nematodes. I'm not sure I've really heard it too much in trying to control cucumber beetle, to be honest with you.
Does it help with the cutworms as well? Possibly?
Boy, I don't know. You know, the predatory nematodes, at least the ones that I've seen, are mainly for those that are insects or those pests that are soil-borne. And
well,
because
it's
these guys
attack the larval state of like the Japanese beetle,
right, which is soil borne.
Right.
You know, they stay in the soil, whereas these other guys that you're talking about don't spend a whole lot of time in the soil. They're actually up on the plants.
I see.
So that would be something I'd really kind of look into. So I'm not real sure about that. There may be some foliar nematodes, but the problem is then they're so subject to drying out and all the things that happen. You know, once they're out there in sunlight and all those other things. So I'm not sure about that part of it. Does it actually list it for cutworms and such?
It didn't list it for cutworms.
Yeah.
On the internet, I looked, it did in one indication, and then when I looked elsewhere, it had not.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah, I would be a little skeptical of any of the insect pests that are out on plants and don't spend some time in the soil, like with Japanese beetle larva. You know, the grubs are in the soil, so they have obviously a
so
much more prone.
So the cucumber beetle, is there a larva in the soil?
No.
They're not?
No.
Well, do you have any suggestions for the bacterial wilt control?
Wow.
They keep saying row covers, and I'm thinking,
right,
that's an extra work for row covers for, like, melons and cucumbers.
Right, but are you familiar with row covers? It's just like a blanket. You're just sort of throwing a blanket over the top of it. They don't even need a framework or anything.
No, I was thinking of the ones with the hoops.
Nope. You really don't have to have they're often called floating row covers, as in there is no support for them. It's just spun mesh stuff. The biggest thing is you may have to order it. You know, sometimes it's hard to find locally. It's hard to find ones that are wide enough because you wouldn't want the real narrow ones. But I would look on the internet or whatever and find some that are, and you just throw them over the top of it. It's really pretty easy. The problem is with a lot of our, you know, squash, pumpkins, all those guys, of course, need some pollination in order for the fruit to form.
Right. That's why I'm not wanting to necessarily use an insecticide because I have honeybees.
Right. So then might be a perfect time where either, you know, you may find you want to go with the row covers and then once they actually start to bloom, then you may usually have to take it off, or you could just act like a, you know, pollinator yourself. It can be done. It's not that hard.
Does the bacterial wilt overwinter?
Yeah, so a lot of times if you do good sanitation, you know, getting rid of the old, you know, stalks and all that stuff usually helps. As in, you know, bury it, something,
right,
get it out of there.
The fact that I have, even if the cucumber, if I can control the cucumber beetles this year, the bacterial wilt might be in the soil.
Well, it's usually on the plant material.
Okay.
You know, like old plant material. As in, if you're doing a good job of sanitation and getting rid of the old stuff, like right now, get rid of any of that debris or any of that stuff that's been laying around, leaves, any of that stuff, get it out of there.
Don't till it in.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right. Thanks
good luck
for the call. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, always on second Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, which means any questions you have on things that grow in the home landscape. And they can be decorative things, trees, shrubs, vegetable plants, house plants, any and all of that. If you have a problem, just give us a call and Sandy will do her best to help you out. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. It's the number to call. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana. And this is line three. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I'm calling because I didn't get out and prune my rose bushes.
we had such a mild fall and winter that it just sort of got away with me. So I'm wondering if it's too late to prune now, and if I do prune, should I dump, put some mulch on top like I normally do, or just not do it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you'll find that it really isn't that bad of a thing, and usually we recommend any kind of major pruning to wait till around the 1st of April anyway, honest with you. So you maybe you did the right thing, whether you realized it or not.
Oh, okay, great.
See? Sometimes putting things off till later is actually a good thing.
Okay.
Usually around April 1st, when the buds start to swell a little bit, is a really good time to sort of look, you know, evaluate the roses at the time, see what may have died back over the winter time, do some, you know, and it is a really good time to do some cleanup. So you're just fine.
Okay, so after I prune around April, do I then add mulch or not? I won't need it by then.
Yeah, by then you really don't need to.
Okay.
Really wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. We'll go to cell phone here, person on line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a lawn and tree question. I had a walnut tree that was in my backyard. It was planted too close to my house. I thought it was a beautiful tree until I realized that it's actually just a giant weed.
Depends on if you're a squirrel or not, but go ahead.
Well, that's right. But, you know, those things dropping off, seeds dropping off, hitting the roof, kept me up all night.
Yeah,
anyway,
I'll bet.
it's gone, and so is my lawn underneath it. I understand, I'll probably mispronounce this, allelopathy, which is poison, apparently, from the tree that kills the lawn. So what I need to know is I understand that maybe Kentucky bluegrass will grow in that type of soil, or do you have a recommendation or how I can improve my chances?
Now, how big a tree was this? Was it fairly good size?
Oh, it was 60 foot.
Oh, wow. So it was a big tree. Yeah, it really probably isn't going to be, you know, once a tree's gone, you're probably going to have fine as far as getting a lawn established. I don't think you're going to see too many problems with lawn. There's some plants that do not tolerate being around black walnut trees. And usually it's things like, tomatoes are a really good indicator of it. They can't stand being around them.
That.
Yeah, you probably did. And over time, even though, you know, there is still some of that within the soil, over time, you know, as it rains and all that stuff is going to get washed out anyway. So it's not going to be a long-term problem for you at this point. But I would go ahead and, you know, go with the lawn, and really shouldn't have too many problems with it.
Well, I planted a mix from one of our local stores in the past, and that does well in the other area of the lawn. Can I go ahead and use that mix again, or should I concentrate on Kentucky Blue or make some sort of a hybrid mix, or what would you suggest?
I would just go with the mix that you've used before that you've had good luck with. As long as the sun and everything else is about the same, I would just go with what you've had before.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
All right, thanks. You know, I hear these stories of people say they have walnuts and nothing will grow.
You have walnuts, though, don't you?
I have a really big one in my backyard, and believe me,
stuff
will grow.
Does grow. Yeah,
it's all right. Junk, but violets will grow nicely. And we had a couple of sort of wildflower kind of things that a neighbor gave us. So mayapple would grow under there. Bluebells, they grow under there. And a whole bunch of other junk, too. So a lot of it would be not particularly desirable, but in fact, things will grow under there.
Right. And I think, and we actually have lists in our office that give you some indication of the plants that you're going to have problems with, the ones that you can grow under walnuts. And so it's a matter of sort of getting those lists and trying it out. So it can be done, but you're right. Some plants are just will not tolerate it.
And your regular turf grass probably.
Yeah, they don't seem to have a big problem. It's more of a probably sun thing more than anything with a lot of the turf grasses. But I think once the tree's gone, I don't think you're going to see nearly the problems, at least with those, because of the root systems of the reduced root systems of grasses and stuff. But for some shrubs, even after the tree's gone, there'd be an issue.
Okay. To next caller, and that would be someone in Champaign, line number two.
Hi. I have an indoor problem right now. I have a huge Norfolk Island pine. It's almost 12 feet tall now.
Wow.
I know. I brought it to work in an atrium so it could continue to grow. It's so heavy, it's very difficult to repot. And I wondered about some of the same issues about being pot bound. And is this damaging to this particular variety?
Yeah, it's still probably the same kind of thing. As what you'll notice is it'll be harder and harder to keep it watered properly,
right,
as I mentioned with the ficus.
Yeah, it likes to leak.
It's just really hard. And so it gets harder to take care of it properly. And the Norfolk Island pines, like the ficus or the weeping figs, really don't like to go super dry in between waterings. And so that's going to be, you may notice sort of, you know, you start having problems with them because of that.
Okay,
right,
well.
Or you water it more often. So it'd be another one of those things, you know, whether you want to think about, you know, you just get a gang. Just get the gang together and everybody helps out. You know, we're going to transplant this.
Well, if there's somebody out there that wants to put one in a house, I'd be happy to have them come
in.
They'd have
to have 12-foot ceilings.
It's huge and it's beautiful.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's gorgeous. It'd be a great Christmas tree.
Okay, thanks.
Good
right,
luck.
Thank you. Let's go next to Matt Toon, line 4, toll-free line right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
With the mild winter that we've had so far, for the most part, a lot of my perennials are starting to sprout again.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's anything to be concerned about, or is there anything that, you know, we can do about that? I mean, my poppies came up.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me too much. I think probably, you know, if we stay around, you know, if we were in the 20s or something, I wouldn't worry about it too terribly much. But if we start getting in the single digits, like David was talking about, I'd be a little bit concerned, especially if we get wind along with that. Sometimes that can be a real problem. If the perennial's been there for a number of years, it's probably not, you know, even if that foliage gets nipped and, you know, looks like cooked spinach kind of thing, it's probably still going to be just fine and it'll relief. But if it's a newer planting, you know, I'd really be thinking, and actually what I did, I just put a bunch of shredded leaves on a lot of my perennials that were already popping up.
Yeah, before it got cold this last snap, I went out and I saw nighttime temperature, so I put a layer of straw on everything.
Yeah, just trying to, anything you can do along those lines, I think, is about our best bet. It's just trying to keep things slowed down and then trying to hopefully capture a little bit of heat that might be re-radiating out of the soil. So,
keep our fingers crossed. For
yeah,
springtime.
You know, there's only so much we can do, but that should help.
Okay, and also, what is a good time of the year to plant new strawberry slips?
Boy, you're getting right on it. Usually around the 1st of April or so is a great time to be thinking about a lot of our fruit crops.
Okay.
So that's when they become available, and so that's really good time. You can start thinking about actually starting the soil areas right now, you know, amending the soil and all that good stuff.
All righty. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call. I'm looking at the forecast that Scott Althoff, one of our weather guys, did for this morning, and maybe it's not going to be for here in this part of the state, maybe not quite as cold as I was saying. I thought I heard one of them talking about single digits. And actually, if you were in the northern part of the state, that would be true. But it looks like here the most recent extended is saying that, say, lows Friday, teens north, 20 south, lows Saturday from near zero in the north to the teens in the south. So maybe around here we would still be looking at low temperatures. Well, here now,
a balmy 10 degrees. Is that what you're saying?
A balmy 10 degrees. Yeah. Here's
I feel better now. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm on the Weather Channel website and looking at their forecast, which I think is a Weather Service forecast. And here they're saying they're calling for lows Friday 15, Saturday 13, Sunday 24, Monday 23, and then it's sort of bouncing back. So maybe the lowest we would be looking at would be the teens. So that's still pretty, compared to what we had, that's still pretty cold.
Yeah, and as I said, if we start getting wind on top of it, the wind starts whipping around those new leaves, you know, you could really see some damage from that. But, you know, most of the stuff should come out of it just fine. You know, they'll re-leaf, they'll be okay. But if I had new stuff, I might be a little bit more concerned about them.
Yeah, I have a little dogwood in my front yard that's now only about, it's been in the ground for maybe about 3-4 years. And I would, there one year something happened and we didn't hardly got any flowers at all. Last year it flowered not too badly, but it would sort of be a shame if the buds were sort of encouraged to get going and then got nipped and we ended up not having any flowers.
Yeah, I'm really more concerned about our woody plants, you know, because obviously we can't, you know, protect them the way we can maybe perennials and such. And so what's going to happen with them? Because for a lot of them, you know, they have to go through a certain amount of cold period in order to break dormancy. And for a lot of them, they're at that point where they've had enough cold period where, you know, just some decent weather and they can break dormancy. And once they break dormancy, then they're much more susceptible to cold damage. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as the plant's dormant, you know, woody plant's nice and dormant, usually they can tolerate some pretty cold temperatures, but once they stop popping out of dormancy, that's not good. So we'll hope for the best on that.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's go on again to someone on a cell phone. This is line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
I have a Black Haw viburnum that about 3 years ago was a single trunk, and then my daughter drove over it. snapped it off. Now it came up. It's naturalized in a thicket, which is fine. But since then, it has not performed. It hasn't bloomed, hasn't really colored much. Of course, no berries. I'm just wondering, would it benefit it if I went in and thinned it some, if I pruned it, or should I just leave it and give it time?
Mm-hmm. Now, what did your daughter do to it?
She drove over it.
Okay. Yeah. I think, number one, your daughter needs to apologize to it.
The plant.
I think there's issues there. Okay. I'm not sure exactly why. You know, black olive viburnums are one of my absolute favorite plants. Just super, super plant. They certainly can be multi-stemmed as what you have now, or you can have it single stem, and they should perform the same. Pretty much, you know, whether it's single stem, as far as how much flowering and all that stuff, you still should get plenty of flowering and all that either way. So part of it is just personal preference on whether you want more of a single stem or whether you want a multi-stem.
Yeah,
that kind of answered your question.
I don't mind the multi-stem at all, but it's just not performing. And I didn't know if it just would take time for it to mature at that point, or if it needed thinned maybe, or maybe it's just location.
Well, you know, black olive viburnums, even though they actually tolerate in their native range, they're an understory plant, so they tolerate shade quite well. And they tend to be a little bit more open in the shade than they do in full sun. They tend to be much thicker in the sun, but they still do very well and they'll still flower. So I don't know. Is this in sun or shade, or is this...
Partial.
Yeah, so it still should be doing fine. I think probably what you've seen is probably just set it back. There probably was certainly some root damage involved there, as well as just some of the top growth that got damaged. I would just give it some time on that. And then as far as pruning, I would just aesthetically just look at it and go from there on how you feel about it. I'd probably wait until after it blooms this spring. Just go ahead and let it bloom and then go from there. But, you know, as far as the rest of it, if it's growing well, I think it just probably just needs some time.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for the call. Let's see. Let's go to, what do we want to do next? How about Bloomington, Illinois, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of a kinship, I guess. I got my bachelor's degree in plant and soil science from Southern. It's been a long time ago.
Oh, good for you.
So, yeah. I have, I know what you're going to tell me. Get ready. I have, well...
this is not true confessions.
This time of year, well, I have the Christmas plant, which is, of course, you know, the poinsettia.
Uh-huh.
And I see, wasn't I right? And, you know, it lost its leaves pretty quick. Well, it came to my mind when you were talking about, you know, the strawberry slip guy, about getting things ready, soil amendment
mm-hmm.
and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you something interesting about the plant after that. But, you know, right, get rid of it. But I thought, you know, I... have it underneath the ultraviolet light,
mm-hmm.
which I'm glad my mom, years ago, she's using an incandescent light, and I told her ultraviolet. She's doing that now, finally. Anyway, and it's getting little leaves, you know, leaves and stuff.
Oh, well.
Care of. And then, of course, I put it in the sun yesterday. We had it late, you know, we had some good sun in
mm-hmm.
the afternoon
mm-hmm.
yesterday. I didn't put it in the window. But is there any, you know, soil, and I studied soil science, too. It's been so long ago, but I mean, is it acid soil pretty much, or are they acid-loving plants? Or, you know, would you even suggest putting this thing out in April? Or what? I mean, putting it out in the yard is what I'm saying, or out in a little bed or something.
Well, you know, if you, you know, with the poinsettias, you know, people enjoy them. I know a lot of people that keep them year after year after year. They're probably never going to look like they looked in the very beginning, as you know, because, you know, greenhouse growers are professionals and they get them to look the way they do with a lot of methods. But if you want to keep it, that's great. And I think I'd certainly wait until we're past frost, since they're definitely a tropical plant. So you're probably talking more like mid-May to the end of May before you think about putting it outside. But if you want to put it outside in a shady garden area, then I'd say go
garden.
For it.
I'm glad I didn't. I was going to interrupt.
I wouldn't put it.
I figured sun loving for sure, but
yeah, I yeah, it's more because of they're just not accustomed to being out there. You've had it indoors, and it's still very different. You'd
would
probably
I keep
notice
it in
some
the house
sun spots.
You know, in the pot for maybe until all the way. I don't know, June, July. Would you do that, or I mean,
you could. You know, if you want to go ahead, some people set them outside in containers. You know, just kind of use them as a containerized plant. That's great. If you want to go ahead and plant it out
right,
in the yard,
right? I was doing that like first week of January outside because we had only for a couple hours. Well, that weather.
You won't have it for very long. If you
no,
do
no,
that.
No. Wait a minute. When we got up to 50 a couple days, you know.
Okay, but that's still pretty cold for a poinsettia.
Okay, and I knew, but I made sure I always had it in the sun, full sun, and all that.
I'd say you really enjoy this plant. So
I'm trying to turn it into a hardy Central Illinois plant.
Oh, hey, well, good luck on that one. Let me know how that works for you.
yeah, good luck with those things. Right, that's what I mean. Okay, that's perfect segue. As I said, throw it out. With those things, good luck with, you know, putting it out in the cool temperatures. Like I said, throw it away. But speaking of throwing away, I had these old hard – keep this. You say, yeah, fine. You're being in good old Central Illinois. I had these old hard beans coming, you know, like, you know, ones you're supposed to soak, and they're embarrassed here. But they're in my mini warehouse somewhere. Came out of the bag or whatever. And they ended up in my pocket. I threw them in this poinsettia plant. They're sprouting great. The old hard beans. So in fact, I forgot they were even in there, and I had another one come up the other day. I said, oh, there's another one that's sandbagging in there. So anyway, keep those. Yeah. I had to get that
sort
in.
Sort of Jack and the Beanstalk kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah, the old, you know, the hard beans that you, you know, right. Come in a bag, you know, that you soak in water.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Go for it.
So yeah, I can ask about, well, I know how to handle those, studying agriculture, I guess. So, agronomy. So, but thanks, and yeah.
Okay,
I didn't know,
good luck.
Well, I didn't know if you'd keep it in the pot for a while or...
You know, either way you want to do it. The big thing is that some people leave them in the pots just so you don't have to dig them then come next fall. But if you want to plant it in the yard, you certainly could do that with any of the tropical plants, just realizing you're going to have to dig it up. And
so not so much discarded. It might do good here in Central Illinois. It might,
you know, it'll be fine. Yeah. You know, it'll add a little green, something a little different. People will ask you what it is and all that kind of good stuff. So there's
Christmas
fun stuff in that.
I'm so glad I called because I would have thought full sun, but you said a shady part of the garden.
Yeah, only because it's been indoors and
Okay, don't try to change it too much here.
Yeah, not quite yet.
Make it hardy. And, okay, thanks,
good
Sandy.
Luck.
All right, thank you for the call. Our guest here this morning in Smart Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on Second Tuesday, she's here at 10. We talk about lawn and garden care, take questions from people who want to talk about plants, things in the home landscape. Could be outside, could be inside, could be ornamental, could be stuff you eat, whatever. Give us a call. She'll see if she can help you out. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Savoy is the next caller, and they're on line one. Hello.
Hi. I had a very difficult time last year with hundreds of new seedlings planting because of the drought. And so with a record high January this year for the state and not much snow, I'm wondering, do you have any indications as to how the groundwater levels look and any early signs of what may come this year in terms of spring rains?
Boy, I don't know. Have you heard it? I don't know, David. I've heard any forecasts on what's to follow in the way of drought or whatever. I'm not sure I've ever heard that for sure, but that'd be something to check on.
You can. I guess one place you might go is if you haven't looked to the website of the Illinois State Water Survey.
That's a good idea.
They might have something on there, and of course, I'm sure that any meteorologist would tell you that, you know, anybody who tells you what it's going to be like now, who tells you what it's going to be like in June or July is. Nobody can. Yeah, no, yeah. So long-range forecasts are like you. Yeah.
But are we dry at this point for this time of year, given the deficit from last year?
I kind of
yeah,
think
I
we
think
are.
We still are. Yes. Yeah, I yes. The way I understood it, we still are.
Okay.
Yeah. On the dry
that,
side.
That kind of, I would bet that in kind of information too would be on the water survey site. You know,
the
drought monitor and maps and. You know, that kind of stuff.
And it's been very spotty within Illinois, so it kind of depends on where you are within Illinois, just how dry it's been or how dry it still is.
All right, thank you.
All right, well, I hope that helps. Let's go to, line number two, and that would be Newman. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
How you doing?
Good.
Hi.
Good. Beautiful day today.
It's lovely.
I have a couple questions. First, when do you spray for bagworms on the evergreens?
Yeah, usually want to start looking for them about mid-June, and probably the end of June is a really good time to think about spraying for them. And that's when they're tiny. They're tiny, tiny, tiny. You won't hardly even tell that they're there, but definitely look for them at that point. And that's the time when they're easiest to control, and it works out much better than waiting until they're actually in the bags.
Okay. Well,
so write it on your calendar. End of June.
Write it on the calendar.
Yep.
Well, I got a lot of them to spray for.
Yeah, that's
a lot of trees.
We've seen an awful lot of bagworm, especially on Colorado blue spruce. I've seen an awful lot of them this last few years.
We had them last year and didn't do anything. Fortunately, not much damage, but maybe this spring will, or this June, we'll have to do something.
Yeah, I definitely, if you had them last year, I would definitely be concerned about them this year because they produce, the thousands will come out of a single bag.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that exciting?
Okay, the next question is, I've never had much success on planting potatoes. I guess about March 17th is the time to plant them.
Mm-hmm.
But they come up very nicely. And then about the time they bloom, it seems they get infected with something and plants die off and you don't get much in the way of potatoes. What do you do?
Yeah, you're probably seeing leaf hoppers, which is something they actually, it's a tiny little insect and they do move. And so sometimes you can actually see them, you know, hopping around out there. But they love potatoes and they actually inject this stuff in their saliva that actually burns the leaf. And it's called hopper burn. You actually see the outside of the leaves will actually burn and then often the leaves will turn yellow. And then that's kind of the end of the crop. So that's probably what you're seeing is leaf hoppers. You certainly can do, we talked about the floating row covers is certainly something that can be done on potatoes, and since we don't care if potatoes get pollinated, then row covers work very well for that. So you may want to think about that, and then certainly there's some insecticides that you could use for that as well, so if you want to go that route. So, but usually you still get some crop off of it, but you're right.
Well,
once
you get little ones.
Yeah, right. You just don't get nearly the amount.
You get the nice big ones like you buy at the store.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, you know.
I wonder if it's just worth it, not worth it to plant them and just go to the store and buy them.
Yeah, sometimes. You know, we're just not in a very good potato growing area, to be honest with you. We're not in the best spot for that. So sometimes, yeah.
But the dill weeds come up good. The dill comes up real good.
Oh, yeah. You're probably loving this kind of weather. That's probably great. And you might even think, you know, with some of those that, you know, you could even do some other methods where you just grow. I don't know if you've ever grown potatoes in straw, that kind of thing, where you can just at least get some crop off of them without a whole lot of effort.
So. I've tried several different varieties, and they all do about the same. They just get little ones and not worth messing around with.
Yeah,
see if there were a solution, but it doesn't sound like it's worth it.
No, other than moving.
No, thanks. I like the flat land.
Yeah, I'm with you. Good luck.
Okay,
thanks for the call. Well, we were talking just a moment ago, the caller had the question about moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And I have now on my computer in front of me, went to the website of the Illinois State Water Survey, which people can find. Just put that in your web browser. And we have a section of online survey data, and here's a section of information on drought. So if you click on that, you can, for example, have a report on drought status in Illinois 2005. We have Illinois current conditions, Illinois latest soil moisture, the U.S. drought monitor, the U.S. drought forecast. So if you're interested in that kind of information,
I think
it probably should tell you. And here, if you click on the drought forecast, you get a map of the United States. And this is seasonal drought outlook through April. And here it shows for the state of Illinois, for almost the northern half of the state, with the exception of a little piece where we are, it shows this as an area where it's showing drought ongoing, some improvement. And for the area that we are, it doesn't really say anything. So I'm not exactly sure what that means. But I'm sure that there is information there, all kinds of information there, if you're interested.
Okay,
in
so Illinois State Water Survey.
Yeah, Illinois State Water Survey, which is www.sws.uiuc.edu, or you can just put Illinois State Water Survey in your browser and you'll get it. It's based on the U of I campus. Let's go on to cell phone, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just discovered a bag of about 100 tulips that I procrastinated planting, and I was wondering if I put them in the refrigerator for several weeks unplanted and then put them in the ground when it gets warmer, if I would have any blooms.
Mm-hmm. Where have they been all this time?
They've been in a dark closet,
mm-hmm.
inside, not in the garage.
Okay, so it's been warm?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, the problem is, as far as putting them in the refrigerator, most of those need at least 13 to 14 weeks of cool period in order to bloom. So you'd have to leave them in more than just a couple weeks. So that's why I was asking.
Tulips in September.
Yeah. So, hey, you could have tulips in September. Boy, wouldn't you be the hit of the block. But that's part of the problem is the fact that just the amount of time. That's why I asked where they were stored, because had they been somewhere where they were already getting somewhat of a cool treatment, then you may be able to get away with that. But it sounds like that's not going to work for you. So I think probably what I would do is, you know, I'd feel the bulbs, because sometimes if it's been real they've been a warm, dry area, they actually kind of fade away, I guess I'll say. And so feel and make sure they're still firm. If they feel like there's nothing there, then they're gone, unfortunately. Right. And then they're good for the compost pile. That's about it. But if they still feel nice and firm, I would go ahead and plant them as soon as you can. Just go ahead, get them out there, plant them. More than likely, they're not going to bloom this year, but they should bloom next year, hopefully.
Okay.
So, yeah, thank those are about your only options. Other than keep them in the refrigerator till September or so.
Sure, okay.
Plant them in.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck.
All right, thank you. Next caller is in Rockford. Line number four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Hey, you too.
Can I use regular fluorescent light bulbs to start flower seeds in my basement?
Sure.
And how much light should they have during a 24-hour period?
Yeah, usually we say about 16 hours is plenty. You want them to have some night light. Nightlife.
Thank you very much.
So that's fine. And actually, the other thing with fluorescent lights is that you want them fairly close. So you want them within, you know, 8 inches or so. You don't want them too far away. But plain old, you know, a lot of times we recommend cool white, warm white mix, you know, having two bulbs. But you don't have to go to the fancier grow lights.
But I don't have the grow lights are so expensive.
I know. And you don't have to go that route. It is a little bit better light spectrum. But for most of us, you know, the others work just fine. And you're absolutely right. They're more expensive and you'll still get good seedlings.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks. I think this is something that came up. Maybe it was last time you couldn't be here and we had Diane and Chuck Voigt.
Sure.
Maybe that was where it came up. The subject of the grow light came up. And they sort of said the same thing, that, you know, the grow lights are really expensive and that, in fact, you don't really – the results are not going to be that much better than if you just use a regular fluorescent light.
Yeah. It's, I mean, if you're really a competitive gardener and you want that perfect, you know, then maybe you enjoy it. I think one of the problems with fluorescent lights is that they don't just go out when they go out. They sort of lose efficiency over time, and so you have to change them out. Yeah. So even though that grow light is still, you know, we want to hang on to them longer because they're more expensive, you may actually be getting less light if you've had it for a long period of time than if you buy brand new, you know, just plain old fluorescent lights. So that's the other problem, is you really do need to look. When it says how many hours they run, then that's how many hours you need to run them, and you need to get new ones after that. So that's the other problem.
We have about 10 minutes left, maybe a little bit less here with Sandy. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Next caller here up in line is in Monunk. Line number one right here. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Sandy.
Hi.
Hi. I'm cutting down a 40-foot tall pin oak tree that died. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding inside, I found these half-inch long ants, the black ants, and yesterday I found this 2-inch long fat green caterpillar. Do you have any idea what they would be?
Wow, a fat green caterpillar?
Yeah, a little over 2 inches long and maybe 3/8 of an inch across.
You know, I don't know, especially had it been dead, the tree been dead for a while, or had it been just
It's sort
dying?
Of half dead, that's why I cut it down. I wasn't surprised to find the ants. There's tunnels all through it. But this big green caterpillar, you have any idea what that would be?
I really don't know what that would be, because it's kind of odd, because most of the wood boring types of, you know, caterpillars that we see are, from what I've seen, have always been white. So I'm a little surprised that this one's green. But
I like green.
Yeah. So, you know, who knows? You know, many of, you know, different insects, the larva will live in, you know, dead stuff. So it's really kind of hard to tell for sure what it would be. So unless you could take a picture of it and send it to one of our insect ID people, I'm not sure what to tell you. It's probably nothing, you know, that's going to harm anything around there. More than likely, it's just living in a dead tree.
Okay.
So
that's my question.
That's at least the good news. It doesn't sound like anything that I could think of that you'd have to worry about your other plants.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Let's go here back to somebody on the campus, and this is line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in taking some shrub cuttings to root, and I'm wondering if you could give me a little information on is there a special type of rooting hormone or a certain time to do it, and any kind of special treatment?
Yeah, I think I assume you have certain shrubs that you're interested in.
Yes,
there's
yes.
Certain probably what you really need to do, because it does depend on some of the shrubs actually root better if it's what's called hardwood. You know, it's later season wood. Some of them root better if it's semi-hardwood. Some of them root better if it's softwood. So really find, you know, doing some research on whatever particular shrubs you're interested in really makes a big difference, so that you get it at the right time. And
okay.
And there's some great propagation books out there. Probably, you know, the textbook is by Hartman, but there's certainly some other ones out there. I was trying to think. I think Ken Drews has a good book on I think it's called Complete Propagation or something along those lines. But do some research, find out about those particular ones, and then they will also normally also tell you what kind of rooting hormone they'd need.
Okay.
And you can actually buy it in different strengths other than what you just get in the garden center, so depending on what you're using. So, but it's fun. I mean, it certainly can be done. And you might also think about layering, which is another thing that can be done with shrubs. It's really pretty easy to do, where you just take one of the stems down and you cut it just on one end of it, or the bottom of it, and then just sort of pull it down, and then it actually roots at that spot. So sometimes layering is a good thing
to
do with shrubs, too.
Kind of a growing season technique, isn't it?
Right. Normally you do that during the growing season. You're right.
And the cuttings could actually be done during the dormant time?
It, again, depends, certainly. Some of them, like some of the evergreens and stuff, do fine if you do it as a dormant season once. But it really is worth doing your homework and finding out which is best for the shrub that you're talking about.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks for the call. We have time, probably, if somebody wants to call real quick, we can get in one more caller. Oh, we do have one, actually, in Clinton on line 4. We'll do that. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a book on herbs. And I have been using these herbal medicines for my health. And I'm wondering why the medical profession doesn't use herbs and research sometimes. I see where even lemon balm is excellent for being nervous and having depression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think?
Well, you know, I think it is, you know, certainly one of those things where herbal medicine's been around for a long time. And I think you might be surprised. There certainly are some folks looking at those. We actually have a class here at the University of Illinois that looks at plants and their medical uses and that kind of thing. So I think you might be surprised there actually is maybe some things going on more than you might realize. It maybe just doesn't make it out to the popular press. So I think there's certainly some interest in plants, and certainly they've been around for a long time, and people have used them for a long time as medicine. So it's something to certainly pursue.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, something I thought I would ask you about here, we just have maybe a minute or two left. Way back at the beginning of the program, we were talking about the fact that snowdrops are maybe one of the first things that are going to come up, and mm-hmm. that they're already up, maybe a little bit early. And you mentioned another plant, the aconite,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is a pretty thing. It has a yellow flower. And I was just thinking about the fact that it's really nice to have some of those things, because they're the very first things,
right,
and
right,
they're the things
right.
that are going to say to you, hello, winter will someday be over.
There's hope.
There's hope.
There's hope.
And I'm just interested in, maybe you might suggest a few things like that. Now, of course, you couldn't put them in the ground now and have them blooming now, but it is something that you could think about in this year you could put in, and then in the winter, spring of 2007,
right,
you
right,
could have.
Right, right.
Flowers.
Actually, a lot of the little things, the little bulbs, even some of the, you can get some really early crocuses, you know, even some of them that bloom a lot earlier than the other ones. So those certainly would be growing. There's one that I just love. It's called the Grecian wind flower, and it looks like a daisy. It's a little, you know, and it comes in kind of different pastel colors, but it looks like this very early daisy little flower to it. It's just lovely. There's Glory of the Snow, which is a mm-hmm. blue type flower, a blue scillas. These are wonderful little bitty things, and so that's why they can bloom so darn early, is that they're little guys. And I think the nice thing about so many of those is that you can find they're so small, you can find a spot for them. You know, plant them right next to your perennials, right next to the sidewalk, right next to, you know, maybe you have daylilies or some other things that certainly come up much later, but plant some of these early things there, and you'll enjoy them and just realize that there is so many things that where we can really stretch out our season. We don't have to always think about, you know, May through October and have that be it for our seasons.
It seems like in around where I live in Urbana, you go around in the springtime and you see that blue scilla.
Oh,
everywhere.
Isn't it great? It naturalizes
itself.
Yeah,
which I mean, to me, is just fine.
Yeah.
I would have no problem with blue scilla coming up in my lawn.
Yeah.
It's okay with me because it blooms. It's very nice in the spring, and then it goes away.
Right.
Some people might not like that. I guess the one thing I'm thinking about with these kinds of things, do you have to be careful about them naturalizing themselves and then perhaps getting into areas where maybe you don't want them to be?
You know, they certainly, many of them will naturalize themselves if they're happy, if they're in a good spot and they're happy. I think from what I've seen, people might object to the foliage, like with spring beauties or some of those that are a little wildflower, and the foliage tends to stay around for a long time. I've heard people being concerned about that in their lawn on how it looks. But most of these, you know, they do their thing. The foliage and everything sort of dies down fairly early, and so you really don't notice them so much later on. And plus, they don't seem to be so, even though they're naturalizing, they're not so aggressive that they're sort of choking everything out, like you think of with Creeping Charlie or something. So it's not that. So I think they're wonderful, just to add a few here and there.
And if you were going to plant something like that, when do you plant? Are those a fall thing?
Yeah, normally that would be a fall thing in October, so you'd go ahead and plant those. But you certainly could move them around. You know, I've had people, you know, certainly as they're blooming, you know, even once they're blooming and stuff, you can certainly move them around. If you decide you want a few in another spot, you can certainly do some of that if you already have some.
Yeah, they seem to be fairly hardy things. They'll take a lot of abuse.
They're great.
Yeah. We're almost out of time. Anything you want to mention real quick?
Well, we do have a program coming up on Saturday, March 11th at Allerton Park at 4-H Memorial Camp in Monticello. And these are for folks that, you know, maybe on the wilder side of gardening, you know, maybe you have an area where you're really thinking about maybe putting in a prairie. You're considering maybe putting in a few trees, you know, here and there that maybe for a forested area. Also rain gardens. You know, we haven't talked too much about rain gardens, but it's really a very interesting concept on how to sort of develop your landscape to get rid of all that water so it stays on your property without going into the storm sewers. So kind of an interesting concept. Also, if you have problems, maybe within, you have a forested area, you have problems with invasive plants, maybe you're interested in wetlands, wildlife. So it's going to be a great program on a little of everything, but maybe a little bit of the wilder side of things, Saturday, March 11th. And they can give me a call at 217-333-7672. And it's just a great opportunity to find out some of these things. You know, people are always interested in prairies, and how can I establish a small area for a prairie, and just a great opportunity. So that's Woods, Weeds, Water, and Wildlife, Managing Your Natural Resources on March 11th. It's a Saturday.
Sandy Mason, our guest. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program here once a month, second Tuesday, 10 o'clock, to answer questions. And every week, if you're interested in gardening and growing things, we have a program on WILL Television, our companion station, a program called Illinois Gardener, Thursday nights at 7. It's a live show. Rotating panels of guests from the University of Illinois, from area sort of greenhouses and plants people, and they're always there every week to answer questions. So you might check that out. Diane Nolan is the host of the show. Illinois Gardener, Thursday nights at 7 on WILL TV.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Next month.
Next month?
It'll be March.
Yeah, the first month of climatological
Woo-hoo!
Spring.
I know you're excited.
How did you get to be so cute?